Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 135. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. What's happening, good sir?
Hey, good to be back with you here, Kevin. Kind of an interesting day. I went to actually see a Clippers game today, Kevin.
Ah, I have not seen the baseball Clippers in quite some time.
I guess we should, in case there's people outside the audience or maybe from the Los Angeles area, I'm not talking about the basketball team.
No, we do not live in Los Angeles. I think hopefully people have figured that out by now.
It's true. The title should help to clue people in if they're just tuning in for the first time. If they don't think it's like a Greek culture-related podcast.
Yeah, and hopefully if they have seen the website at all, they've seen the logo, which is an Ohio and a Pennsylvania, turned upside down so that it looks like a P.
Yeah.
So
I think putting these things all together,
clue you in.
Right. It's a nice little trail of breadcrumbs to let you know. Yes, I'm talking about
we are very
Columbus
very
Clippers.
We are very subtle with our hints.
So yeah, got to watch a baseball game. Went to it was kind of a company outing thing at a noon game, and they were like. There was a game last night that was delayed for the rain, so they kind of finished up that first game and then played their second game. But our tickets were good for both games, so that was kind of nice.
Oh, that is pretty snazzy.
Yeah.
And I have not because they're the farm team of the Cleveland Indians.
Correct.
Because for the longest time they were the Yankees farm team because George Steinbrenner's wife is from was from the fine city of Columbus, and she is no longer with us.
Ah.
I think.
R.I.P. George Steinbrenner's wife. Yeah, and just to call back, I guess, to the article that we talked about with the changes to the baseball swing, it did seem like there's a lot of people going for those long balls there. There were actually two Clippers players who got back. You know, there's back-to-back home runs at one point.
Oh.
So they ended up winning the second game in extra innings, but they only played the seven inning game because of the additional game that they had, or I guess additional game portion that they had to finish at the start of the game. So it was a little bit of a weird sort of disjointed experience there.
Yeah, it would be kind of interesting. Who were they playing?
Rochester.
Oh, okay. Because they keep on meaning to eventually... the Indianapolis Indians are the Pirates' farm team. And I keep on meaning to go to them, but I don't know what it is. Like, they rarely have a weekend series.
Hmm.
And then I feel like when they do have a weekend series, I end up with a Columbus Crew game at the same time. And it's... split loyalties. I don't care that much about the Pirates farm team to make it a priority over the Crew.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if the Pirates were playing in town, you might be more tempted to go see them over the Crew if you had to choose.
Yeah.
It would be a tougher choice, at least.
Agreed.
But the farm team is kind of a little tougher sell, I guess.
Yeah, it's not quite as easy as it sounds for me.
But yeah, there was some rain, but overall it was a fun time. And every time I go there, I feel like I'm like, why don't I go here more often? It's kind of a fun experience, you know?
Yeah, and oh my God, I'll never forget. Our good ex-friend Sean was there to witness this when one of the girls I dated in between wives there, she completely freaked out at one of the Clippers games because I recycled her plastic cup because it was like the first time she'd ever bought a beer at a baseball stadium. And like she was our age at the time, you know, so it's like 10 years ago.
Uh-huh. Oh, so she wanted to have it as a souvenir?
Yeah, she wanted to have it as a souvenir and just lost it on me. I'm just going to say that that was the beginning of the end of that one.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be a pretty big red flag, I think. Yeah, you did well to let that raise your hackles there a little bit.
Yeah, there were a couple other. I got mild, not more than mildly concerned at that juncture.
So yeah, any people who are you know, trying to meet people new, maybe go on a date to a baseball game. You see their true colors emerge.
Oh man, yeah, that was pretty crazy.
But you know, speaking of things that are crazy and maybe sports adjacent here, Kevin. And I think I'm calling an audible, by the way. There sure. was a recent story regarding the athlete Kellen Winslow that I brought to your attention.
Completely
insane.
Yeah, I had been aware somewhat of his trial for, 'cause he was on trial for rape. Because it's a
indecent
couple of
exposure and lewd conduct.
Yeah,
he was convicted
on Monday. But I know that I'd seen that, you know, like when I go to Yahoo Sports or whatever, I know that I'd seen the highlight hit my phone a couple of times about his trial.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I wasn't too surprised that he was on trial, but this article from Deadspin. If we're rating headlines, extremely accurate. The headline writer, not in the wrong. Kellen Winslow II couldn't stop masturbating in front of his teammates.
Yeah, this was a strange angle to take, considering, you know, the rape and indecent exposure, lewd conduct, etc. I mean, I guess that would fall under the lewd conduct and indecent exposure.
But yeah, I think their article is more like, we know everyone else has written about how bad this is, so we're just gonna
point out something a little odd about this whole story. Yeah.
Yeah, the strangest of the strange part. And because they did not do the reporting, because I believe all this information was from a Sports Illustrated report.
Correct. I was just reading that here. I didn't actually read the Sports Illustrated article, but that would probably be, you know, contained for more information.
Yeah, I would imagine that has more information about the charges at hand. But Deadspin kind of cut to just a specific portion, because obviously rape, indecent exposure, and lewd conduct is not not looked upon well in OPA land here. I think that we can issue that blanket statement.
Yeah. So according to the Sports Illustrated article, he could count on having an empty seat next to him due to his ritual of watching hardcore pornography on his portable DVD player, according to those sources. On one occasion, an equipment manager tasked with delivering gear to lockers after hours walked in on Winslow masturbating at his locker, two seats away from the entrance, according to two team officials familiar with the incident.
Hey, I mean, I just read that one, and I can't believe that there's two more excerpts from the article that get even stranger.
Right.
Like,
watching, like, pornography, like, on a plane? Like, I don't understand. This guy obviously is not right.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to, like, I would not feel comfortable masturbating in front of anyone.
And the other excerpt, I guess, we might as well.
Yeah.
When pornography became widely available on mobile phones, he often watched it on a smartphone during meetings, the two former teammates said. Now, Kevin, just to kind of jump in here, parenthetically, it's just, I think, poor form to be watching any kind of video during a meeting. Wouldn't you say so?
I would think that, if we're just starting from a base level here,
mm-hmm.
watching something that is not the meeting,
mm-hmm.
it is bad form.
Right.
I would not be playing on my phone if there was a meeting going on. Maybe take some notes, possibly have to look up something on the calendar. On my phone, but those are the...
I mean, you may play a game while you're podcasting, but not while you're in a meeting.
Nope.
little peek behind the curtain for our listeners out there.
Yeah. And they wouldn't even have known if you hadn't pointed it out, Ken.
Oh, that's why you love me.
You and your you kids and your dog.
But yeah, so he would be often watching pornography on his smartphone during meetings. Nowadays, they say such sites would typically be blocked by the building Wi-Fi. Now, that's kind of weird that they even have to do that. and what if they just, you know, go on their network? I don't know. Teammates begged out of shared hotel room assignments with Winslow because he watched pornography and masturbated openly with no regard for who was in the room, a teammate and an official said.
It just sounds like a lot of masturbation, too.
Right.
Like, if it's this out in the open, like, how frequently did he do it?
Like, I don't know.
It's
weird. I mean, you can maybe think back to the days when you first figured out how all that worked and being excited about it. But my God, the man's a grown man. What the hell?
Yeah, at some point, I would think multiple times a day would be square out of it. And it just doesn't seem like at your locker or even on an airplane would be a comfortable location. Like, I guess if I want to, I want to be comfortable. I don't want to be stuck like on a folding chair in a locker room or like, you
know, anywhere where, hey, somebody could walk in on me. Like,
well, yeah, I feel like I've covered that one already. But right. I mean, it can't really be revisited.
I don't
enough.
Want that. That cannot be stressed enough, I think. Yeah. You're right. You would want to go somewhere private for that sort of activity. You know? That would cut out a whole lot of these problems.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
But I think, like, the kind of more serious question or point that could be, you could look at this and say, like, this went on for so long. And
yeah,
it really is like a violation of these players, right? And yet nobody did anything about it.
Well, yeah, and it wasn't like, because they had incidences from both, because he was drafted by the Cleveland Browns, and then he got traded to Tampa Bay, and both teams have incidences, and evidently the coach, Romeo Crennel, tried to talk to him about it when he was in Cleveland.
Mm.
And
apparently it was not effective.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's just like, oh my God, he was... Like, I know that he played pretty well because I feel like he was a fantasy football regular. But it's crazy that he didn't get cut or, like, there wasn't something going on to make it more serious.
Like, just from being skilled at your job, that's enough to excuse this kind of crazy behavior.
Yeah, like, I can't believe that they didn't just suspend him for a game without pay or something. Like, call it a personal conduct. You know, reason that he was sitting out. Maybe he did. Like, maybe I didn't pay that much attention to his career, especially after he went to Tampa Bay. I will admit that watching the NFC is just not something that I do all that regular.
Yeah. If they did discipline him, I don't think it was mentioned in the article that we saw, at least.
Yeah, it was not mentioned in the article on Deadspin, and
It didn't work either.
Yeah, and if it did happen, then we don't either remember.
Right, but it seems like if it, you know, you suspend him for a game and it doesn't work, like, the next step shouldn't be to throw up your hands and be like, oh, well, I guess that's, you know, we tried.
Yeah, that's the other thing that, like, there had to have been some teammates that were vocal enough about it that they said stuff to him. Right? Like, someone along the line said something to him. One of those other tough guys said something. Like, I understand wanting to keep your distance because that, yeah, even maybe you don't really want to watch hardcore porn after you're done at practice.
Or, yeah, on a plane, right.
Or on a plane, you know.
Or sit next to someone who's masturbating. Yeah. These are all reasonable things not to want to do. But I don't know. I feel like, it, in a way, like, there's a lot of times when there is, like, a sexual assault and people are like, well, why didn't somebody fight or why didn't, you know. I feel like people are really uncomfortable about this sort of thing and, in general, are going to try not to, like, you know, try to get involved as little as possible, almost.
Yeah, I mean, it could be something to harken back to my childhood. I honestly do not recall a birds and bees conversation. I feel like that was left up to the school.
Yeah.
In my household.
Yeah, I would say the same. Yeah.
So,
I think that's pretty common. I don't know.
Yeah, so that would definitely speak to what you're talking about, the uncomfortability of that situation. Maybe just because it is something that's that weird, nobody did say something.
Mm-hmm. And I think that can, like, I don't know, work to someone's benefit like that. If they're just completely unwilling, you know, or don't give, you know, a damn about anybody else, you know? It in a way works in their favor.
Yes, it does. Yeah, it just kind of helps the problem at least keep on being there. Because, I mean, they didn't mention how frequently this happened, but I mean, it sounds like it was.
If he was, you know,
I mean, it sounds like he was known for it. Yeah. Like
He would be count on having an empty seat is what it sounded like. Now, that's just how they characterize it, but
yeah,
I mean, it sounds that way. So
yeah, because I would imagine that if you get all new teammates in Tampa Bay, that maybe they're not, maybe word from the Browns locker room hasn't hit yours.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you don't have any old connections there. But you would think if there was some type of connection, someone from the Browns is like, hey, yo, keep an eye on this dude. He just masturbates in the locker room.
Well, I would definitely want to mention that after the trade was finalized. That's not the sort of thing you would want to bring up, you know, ahead of time.
Yeah, I don't think you're bringing it up before then, but once that... Once you see that he's been traded to Tampa, like, if you have a buddy on there and you didn't forewarn him,
right,
that this guy does this, like, I think that rightfully the guy in Tampa has the right to kick the Browns guy's ass, like, just on general principle for not giving the warning.
Interesting. I'm not sure if that would be contractually enforceable or not, but... you know.
No, it isn't. I just think that's just doing your friend a solid. Like, you don't need to describe what happens or what he's watching, but you can say exactly what this article does. He likes to watch hardcore pornography on the plane.
Yeah. No, thank you. That would be, I think a very reasonable response.
You know, I don't think that, you know, that's not breaching that weird birds and bees talk situation, you know? If you just say that, even that part, that'd kind of help give someone a heads up.
I mean, it does make you wonder, like, how long has that been going on in his life? Like, how long has he kind of been able to get away with that, like, even before the NFL? Or is that something that just sort of has gotten worse over time? I don't know.
Oh,
and as he kind of got more power and became
that's a
sort
good
of
question. If
immune.
If it happened at Miami, because he went to the University of Miami.
Uh-oh.
Did it start in high school? Like, and again, like, I can't believe, it's kind of crazy that his libido didn't go down at any juncture to at least maybe cut back on the problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like a psychiatrist or anything, but I do believe that sex addiction, addiction is something that has been thrown around before. So it would not surprise me if he was diagnosed as having something like that, because it does seem kind of compulsive almost in a way.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it does seem like seeing... Hopefully when he's in prison, they send him to a psychologist to help him work through whatever is going on here. Because that, I would think, would be the best...
But not having any
problems,
but not having faced any consequences for so long, you know, that's not good for anybody, really.
Oh.
So.
Yeah, and these are definitely real, these will be real consequences that he has coming his way. But I mean, he's probably going to be a weirdo and masturbate in jail.
Mm.
But I mean, his dumbass might get shanked in there.
Mm-hmm.
If he pulls some kind of a stunt, and that would definitely be you know, a repercussion that he's not going to come back from, quite possibly.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hope violence on anybody, but
no, I'm not hoping it on him. I'm just saying that it seems like a real possibility.
Yeah.
Like, if he's that open about masturbating, like, I think there's going to be someone in there that might do something about it.
Yeah, I hope that, hopefully, this can be a bit of a wake-up call to somebody out there to be like, hey, you know, you don't have to tolerate this kind of behavior from people. Like, you shouldn't have to.
Right.
I don't think he was that good of a player, you know? Like, I don't know if anybody's that good of a player.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Yeah, this one just... The second I started reading it, it's just like... I can't believe that it was tolerated to this degree, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe the teams didn't... wanted that... Like, I guess that's the only perk of flying private, which I believe most NFL teams do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they would have had to fly commercial all the time, I think the teams would have taken a little different stance.
Well, that is interesting.
And what does he do on a commercial flight? Holy shit, I did not think about that until right now.
I mean, there's no, well, I mean.
He had to have taken a commercial flight at some point.
I would say there's no way that he would be able to do that on a commercial flight, but... Then again, I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, if he bought the whole row.
He rubbed one out in the stall real quick.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that happening. Sure.
Fucking weirdo.
Oh, well. You know?
Yeah. That one, that is just... I mean, we've had some bonkers stories, and... That one is just right at the top of the list. You know, I really am flabbergasted by the extent of what happened here.
Yeah. I mean, there's really no, I feel like great way to transition here, Kevin. <gonna be tough. laughs>
Well, you could have gone with the modes of transportation. We were just talking about flying. We did plan on a revisit to a topic that we like to cover, Elon Musk and his Hyperloop, which Columbus was in on the bidding to help give him money to fund the Hyperloop.
Well, yeah, so.
But not interestingly enough, it would seem that the Hyperloop is hit a few snags here.
Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, this was an ambitious project. And, you know, Kevin, I feel a little bit guilty in a way for kind of hyping this technology in the past. And maybe jumping on a little bit of the science hype, you know. Hype is probably the best way to put it, that really gets ahead of itself a little bit in some ways.
Well, I felt like there had been, in the articles that we had read before, I felt like there had been a few smaller scale studies of using a like a magnetic levitation to travel. And I don't feel like that really got addressed in this article.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, what happened to those small scale studies? You know, did they not go anywhere? Did they die out? You know, maybe sometimes things work in small scale, but don't work in large scale. You know, I mean,
I've looked into, you know, a little bit more of the physics of this idea. So like the idea of having a basically vacuum tube that you're putting cars through to take advantage of, you know, low friction and to propulse them through there using magnetic levitation. The, I think, problem that I've seen is it's kind of hard to have a large area under vacuum. Like, it takes a lot of energy to kind of get that all out of there and to maintain that vacuum. So for like hundreds of miles of track, that could be tricky. But it would also be highly susceptible to any kind of small leak anywhere. And certainly a combination of leaks or small leaks would be bad. Just because I guess adding a small leak under vacuum conditions is enough to really kind of take away your benefits from having a vacuum condition in there.
Yeah, I mean, it is not a vacuum anymore, even if there is a pinhole.
So that is a pretty big challenge for materials, you know, to have hundreds of miles without any kind of like pinhole. Now they've talked about having, I guess, sections that could be closed and sort to be able to sort of contain a leak if something like that were to happen. That seems like that would kind of shut down your whole system, which you would not really want to.
Yeah, because you'd it's not like a train situation where they typically have a couple of pair of, like, I know that I took the channel tunnel there going from England to France when I was overseas, and they have three sets of tracks under there, and they all interweave so that if one set of tracks needs to be worked on, they can direct the trains and onto different tracks. And with the Hyperloop, you can't really do that. Like, it's either you're in a vacuum or you're not.
Yeah.
You know, unless you have like three sets of tubes and that, but still, like, you know, you're kind of tripling your challenge. Like, you're saying it's hard enough to try and make one vacuum tube hundreds of miles long, and then you're trying to make three of them.
Yeah.
You know, that would be pretty tricky.
And this was, I think, one of the, you know, a patent that Elon Musk came up with and then decided to make public to kind of let anybody control, or, you know, and there's been several companies that have gone into business trying to make it a reality. And so far it's been, I think it's been tough going. So definitely less cause for exuberance, I guess, at the idea of being able to travel to Chicago in half an hour or whatever it was.
Half hour or 45 minutes, something like that, from here to there. That would have been pretty badass. Like, because, I mean, I remember it being short enough that it's just like, hey, man, some people's commutes are literally that long, like, right. Just driving in a car. So doing 45 minutes in on a train would not be all that outlandish.
No.
And that was actually the main thing that the article that we linked to was talking about, is that it seems like most of his plans are coming down more to a high-speed rail more than you know, like you were talking about, more like that vacuum tube. You know, I always think about being at the bank with the tubes, with the pneumatic tubes.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, I feel like that was one because I did have to. I guess I didn't even look at the picture that says Virgin Hyperloop One. So Richard Branson is at least given this a try too.
Oh, right. There was a company called Hyperloop One, which was bought by Richard Branson's Virgin company. So, yeah, they're called Virgin Hyperloop One now. And I believe that's the company that is involved with trying to make a connection here in the Central Ohio area. And they were at a event I went to last year and didn't get to this year, but I saw they were there as well. Was a maker festival kind of for people interested in, you know, hobbyist building things with technology.
Oh, okay.
I was not prepared to see them there, so I did talk to the person, the representative, for a little bit, and unfortunately, I didn't have any probing questions at the time to ask him. But they had
You didn't think to ask him about the Hyperloop?
I well no because they were showing they were. Showing models or
Oh.
concepts of what they were
Doing.
planning on doing,
Oh,
yes.
okay.
But I didn't think to ask about sort of the problems with the vacuum technology, and I don't think I was even aware of the problems at the time. But I kind of would have liked to
Should have seen
maybe,
it coming, Ken.
yeah, I should have been a little more prepared, I guess, had I known that there's that company would be there. But this article that we're kind of basing our conversation on was, I think, taking a bit of the position that there's some companies that are making a lot of money, you know, as consultants doing studies on this sort of thing, but it's sort of unlikely that something will actually come out of this concrete.
Yeah, I would honestly, like, even if we got a high speed rail from like here to Chicago, I'd be pretty excited about that.
Honestly, I would be excited for any kind of rail. I mean, what, I don't understand why there's no trains in Columbus. That's like crazy to me.
Yeah, it's still pretty wild that that is not a thing. And yeah, it's definitely something that I know that one of my aunts really liked a trip in the Pacific Northwest because I believe she went from like Vancouver to Calgary, which is where one of my other aunts had lived at the time. And she said that that was really beautiful. I know that a number of times I've on this show I've talked about the virtues of the train system in Europe. I loved traveling over there and being able to sleep. You know, when you're not the one in charge of driving, you can sleep
Right.
with reckless abandon. You can sleep just all that you want to. I tended to use the time to work on schoolwork some and sleeping. Like I believe I did both there. So yeah, I'd love for something like that to come up. 'Cause I mean, even the wife loves to use the bus system here in Columbus,
Yeah.
but it unfortunately is not a very practical thing for me at my job. And well, even with her job recently, she just with where we're at, there is not a good way to get from here to her work. So she is abandoned using the bus.
Yeah, there was someone here in locally that went ahead and designed a kind of fantasy, well, what do they call it here? Fantasy transit map for Columbus. And they, using existing train lines, kind of drew in what they think would make sense for like passengers to be able to use or share with freight, I guess. Doesn't look like there's anything out here too close to Gehenna, Kevin. Maybe North Hamilton there.
Oh, yeah. That's not that far from here.
Yeah, so that could work.
That would have to be my my station there.
Yeah. But I think it's kind of cool that somebody kind of went to the thought, and hopefully eventually something like this could see reality here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm good with the buses, but there are still some limitations, I guess, with those.
Yeah, we're definitely not there with the public transit in this the city.
Well, in this country.
True.
Let's just say there are some good public transit places.
But even like New York City, it's from what I heard, it is really having a lot of troubles with their subway system.
Yeah, a lot of people bitch about that one. I feel like because we've used it some when we've gone down to Atlanta, because we went down for WrestleMania one year, and we went down there for the UFC the following year.
And what do you think of the transit down there?
Well, I believe that it was made fun of down there, but it was kind of nice to not have to, again, like, not driving is kind of fun. I hate fucking traffic. People drive like they're fucking idiots.
That's true.
And people drive like they're looking at their goddamn phones 90% of the time.
Well, that's probably true as well.
Hey, yeah, so it's not fun. Like, I am cool with avoiding that stress.
Yeah, it is super stressful to drive, I gotta say.
You know, because that is certainly the thing at the new office here. The drive, while mildly shorter, only by about 3 miles or so, it is a lot more harrowing and takes longer because of the level of traffic. The traffic that I dealt with going to Dublin, which is on the northwest side of town, it compared to Grandview was it doesn't even compare. Like, it just took me longer because it was 3 more miles to drive there.
Mm-hmm.
Or not longer, it took me the same amount of time, but it was just because the drive was longer. Like, there was not really traffic. You know, there were other cars on the road with me, but there wasn't traffic, if you know what I mean. Like, it was always flowing. There wasn't a time where I was just sitting there and just looking at my dashboard and banging my head to whatever I was listening to.
Yeah, yeah. That's no fun. I mean, I guess unless you're really rocking out to a good tune or something, but even that has its limits.
Yeah. Especially when the people behind you, again, cannot drive and you're fearing that someone's going to rear-end you every time you have to start and stop. I've been almost hit more times than I care to count. And I saw a crazy accident this week. I saw a hit and run and the guy could barely drive his car. But I couldn't catch up to him. I felt bad. He rear-ended someone right near my office. And he was barely getting away, but he had the light and he was far enough ahead of me that I couldn't see what his license plate was by the time he got out of my range.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that got resolved. But again, there are crazy people. There are crazy people that don't want to take accountability for when they fuck up either.
Oh, well, you know.
That's... Even if their car barely drives.
Sadly, if people feel like they can get away with something without getting caught, they're going to try to go for it.
Kent.
Well, there we go, tying it back together.
Oh, man. Well, Ken, we have talked about Kellen Winslow on a plane.
And maybe somebody else thinking about something that they might be able to get away with without getting caught, such as one of the... one of the titular characters of our next topic. And I had to put this in there just because I've seen it pop up. And maybe that's almost a meta story. but, you know, every so often there's these concepts that kind of bubble up through, I guess, the internet. I almost was going to say society, but it's really the internet culture, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
In this case.
Because this is certainly something I know I've mentioned it on the wrestling shows. I'm not sure if I've mentioned it on here. Because I am actually busy in my new job, my level of internet time has gone down quite drastically.
Mm-hmm.
A story about wife guys, I would say probably would have caught my attention previously. May have come across the old DeFrango desk, but not the case anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not surprised. Like, the internet definitely loves, they love categories, man. They love them.
Yeah. It's like, it's the old age-old question of when is a thing a thing? if you can describe it,
yeah.
Does it really exist?
Yeah, this article definitely does not grapple with that reality.
Yeah.
But they do, evidently there has been a spate of articles in the New York Times, and I'm trying to think, because there is five different magazines or papers.
Yes, I have to say, I saw this keep popping up, and I was like, no, I'm not going to put this on to the topic list. No, I'm not going to put this on there. And then I saw this article that basically was noting the existence of all these other articles out there about this
phenomenon.
Character of the wife guy, yes.
Yeah. And that's... when you can put that many links in your article, like, that's more than in an OPA article. Like, they are just link happy. Because I looked at, there was Curvy Wife Guy.
Which I do remember that one happening. I think it was a couple years ago. A guy who loved his curvy wife and had to post on Instagram to let everybody know about it. And seemingly was, I guess, a little self-congratulatory, or at least people felt that way about it. But he was a wife guy of the recent past, I would say.
Well, and I guess we can kind of, they do kind of, evidently, all of the articles, because...
Did we mention what this is all about?
Yes, since Slate.com kind of aggregated all these articles about wife guy, but none of the articles really completely agreed on what the definition of wife guy is. But in general, I would say that there is an agreement that it is a gentleman who gains fame on the internet because of his wife, mm-hmm. or something that she does.
Yeah, I think in some ways... You know, people do get a little bit of a, people will maybe give them a second look, or say, like, they feel like they have some extra cachet for having a wife in general. Like, you know, well, this guy, you know, for somebody sees something in this guy, at least, you know, that sort of a thing. But this is kind of taking it to... There's something exceptional happening here, and really the only reason that this guy is being recognized is because of something that happened vis-a-vis his wife.
Yeah, whether it's, you know, obviously curvy wife guy, his yeah. wife was, you know, a little on the bigger side, and they loved it. She loved to show off her curves. And show a picture of her squad.
He loved her curves. We don't know necessarily. She did show them off in the picture, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, no. They were going on a body positivity tour.
Okay.
Like, I'm thinking that she at least, you know, to me, she was at least agreeable to it.
Yeah.
Maybe it wasn't her idea to do this, but she was definitely...
Well, she knew somebody was taking that picture, at least.
Yeah, she was benefiting from this herself. but again, I mean, it kind of does go back to the definition where, you know, she's the main...
point of interest, I suppose?
Point of interest, I think, is a good way to term it.
Yeah, because he is, in that case, writing all about her,
Yeah, and how much he loves her.
And her curves.
And her curves.
There was, I think the, I don't know, this was maybe a lesser known one of a example of a chore play wife guy who says, if you do chores, basically if you do chores to get sex, then that's called chore play. Was the,
yes, chore play wife guy. I mean, that's quite something to be known for. I would think that you'd just be on youporn.com. I cannot say that I've run across chore play wife guy.
That could be a channel on there for all we know.
Yeah, I would think that that is under there. there was definitely one that drew some interest. I don't know what he does, but It was elf wife guy,
right?
What is it, just because his wife was small? Because you linked to an article that was talking about their impending divorce. And yes. Because he made some giant apology about their divorce.
Well, it's interesting.
And then
yeah.
I had to laugh when I saw that she posted, oh, I don't know what he posted because he blocked me. And also he's fucking at Holly something or another. And it's just, that reminded me of, that happened, something similar happened in the WWE.
Oh, really?
Recently, the one announcer, Corey Graves, him and his soon-to-be ex-wife are getting divorced. And she let out the news that he was sleeping with the one female wrestler known as Carmella.
Okay.
And, the public airing of laundry like that, like, obviously, if he was the one cheating on her, he was in the wrong. We're not sure. We can only go on her word. Oh. And the fact that they're getting divorced.
Yeah.
this whole, like, public airing of laundry, like, I have not all that frequently aired that laundry, even of my own, even though it's a decade old news at this point. I didn't need to like post that on Facebook. That would have been fucked up. I guess I just wouldn't have done it about my ex-wife and just said, hey, oh, by the way, my soon-to-be ex-wife was fucking and linked to the guy's profile. Like, that seems, I don't get that part of the mentality, you know what I mean? On her part, like, I can understand being pissed about the situation because, again, I was there.
So
I sympathize with her.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have gone to that length to out him and the person he's,
I feel,
or
like,
or she was sleeping,
yeah,
with.
Yeah, I feel like
I guess me, 10 years ago the internet wasn't quite as bonkers either.
Yeah, you guys weren't both public figures at that time, I guess I'd say.
Well, that does make things different, but that's where the wrestling comparison comes in, because he is definitely a public figure. His wife is not a public figure, and he's definitely not a wife guy.
Right,
he's more of a guy than a wife guy.
But in this case, I think what maybe pushed her over the edge, at least to my point of view, is that he put out that statement first, which was like it said nothing about him cheating on anybody. It was like we both made this decision together after having gone to counseling.
Yeah, and I would imagine she's seen a screenshot.
And
one of her friends is not blocked by him.
And, right, that is also the the most pertinent part, I think. Like, the part that really made this story take off is that he then blocked her on Twitter so that she couldn't see what he posted or respond to him in any way. So I think that maybe what drove her to kind of vent like that publicly.
Oh, yeah, because...
She said who he was sleeping with, and...
Yeah, my ex-wife went to Block Island two years ago. Not that she ever tried to communicate with me, but after Cayenne passed away, she contacted me. Because I've told you this story before, right?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Where she asked me to take a DNA test, even though she admitted that the child was, you know, the guy she cheated on me with.
Right.
With. And it's just like, no, you're headed straight for Block Island, bitch.
Yeah, that's some crazy... Again, we're talking about red flag behavior. That's another example. We're turning into a bit of a relationship podcast, but that's, I think, okay. We're just branching out.
it happens in OPA, man. We are in relationships. I'm in a much better one now.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good takeaway from that.
Yeah, these things happened, but again, I guess drawing all kinds of different comparisons for this article about the women, wife guys.
Yes.
Was where we were at before completely derailing into other stories. But yeah, these guys...
Oh, yeah.
Because it was elf wife guy was the one getting divorced.
Yes. And that was one of the standout ones of the wife guy theme, I would say.
Yeah. And there was only the one that don't email my wife guy who supposedly spray painted don't email my wife on their garage door.
Yeah, that was, I remember seeing that picture. I don't know if it was the early days of the internet, but probably in the 2000s, I want to say.
Yeah, I did vaguely recall seeing this one.
And it was always, I think the big question there is, if somebody's emailing his wife, are they going to really see what he spray painted? He should probably be emailing the guy who's emailing his wife, right? He doesn't need to, like, put the whole spray paint... on the outside of the house for everybody to see?
I would hope that...
this was probably the early days of email for some people, I'd say, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, depending upon when this happened exactly, if it was early days of internet, spray painting your garage door, not a good plan.
Well, that was sort of the reply all of the pre-internet age. If you wanted to get a message out there, yeah, you didn't have like a mailing list. You would just spray paint it on the side of your house to be able to get your message out there. So he was pulling back to an earlier time, I suppose. Just sort of a weird little reminder of a time gone by.
Oh, man. Yeah, and a lot of time's gone by, Ken, and we have skipped one topic time and time again.
Oh, my good Lord, we have.
And I'm not sure if we particularly want to get into it or not tonight.
Oh, we might as well just keep pushing it, I think.
We're going for a long show here. So one that we've talked about or put on the docket for now, this is the third week running, is it is an article titled "Too Many People Want to Travel."
Yeah,
and
this was another one that I saw popping up again and again. So I guess it's probably good that we get to it at some point here.
Yeah, and I do think that it's kind of an interesting because in some ways I thought to myself, oh, when I went over to Italy, things weren't that crazy. But, you know, it's kind of funny how 20 years later, things might have changed.
Yeah.
Because I do think that they kind of buried that a little bit in the article, that they said it would seem, I believe it was about 2005, they said was the tipping point for when travel got so accessible that places just started to become overcrowded. And it was kind of interesting. One of the new interns at my office there, she is a Kent Stater, but lives in Columbus here. She, God bless her. She's one of the few and the brave that have ventured out of Columbus to get an education. And just headed up north to my sort of old stomping grounds. But she was talking about having a hard time getting around masses of people in Florence, which is where our program is based. Though there were certainly a number of visitors to that fine city, I will admit it's maybe a little bit lower on the totem pole than Rome and or Venice. And probably even Milan.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was talking in particular about... because I believe... Well, they showed a picture of the Mona Lisa with, you know, half of Europe taking pictures of it on their cell phone.
Well, that was one of the incidents that, in particular, the workers at the Louvre... Well, I don't think I ever pronounced that correctly. Went on strike, basically, because they felt they were being overworked. There was too many people to deal with coming to the museum. And for certain places, it does seem like there is such a thing as, like, you really can't fit more people in there, you know? Like, the fire marshal says you can only have this many people in your building. Now, they don't do that for outdoors areas, but... there is some kind of limit to where you can have really no more people getting into that space. And like you said, travel becoming more accessible. I think one thing they mentioned in the article too was the millions of people who were able to rise out of poverty in China due to their economic
boom they've been
having.
Yeah.
In other parts of the world. Have now have middle classes where they're able to travel, and it kind of you realize that
all the popular spots have gotten more popular is essentially what's happened. Like more people have been able to go to them, and you know they kind of mentioned it. And I mean, I guess I thought about you know just being in the Catholic school system that we've mentioned previously. You know, they talked about pilgrimages even back in the Middle Ages. Now, granted, again, it, like you said, like it's more about people having money, and there are A, more people on the planet now, and B, more people with at least the level of money to go traveling like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pilgrimage thing was definitely a little more reserved. There were, well, again, less people on the planet at that point. So, but it, I guess it's not surprising that these popular destinations are becoming even more popular if people have the access to go travel to them.
Well, right. The world famous sort of locations, Venice, like you said, the Louvre and Paris.
Well, yeah. And I mean, Venice was sinking when I went there. In 97. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I guess that's the other thing that's kind of interesting. Like, in some ways, like, I've always wanted to go back at some juncture. And I do believe that that will be possible, finally. At some juncture here in my lifetime. So, you know, I guess it'll be interesting to kind of see what the difference is when I go over there, because I mean, it will happen and I'm sure I will, notice a difference. One thing that I did notice, when I was talking to, our new intern at the office, she pulled up a map of Florence and she was showing me where she lived. And I had to laugh because BrewDog has a pub in Florence.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm like, yes, that that definitely did not exist when I was over there.
Right. You would expect some things to change, I think. So that's just being one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I do remember loving to go to an English pub when I was there. They made a burger. That was, from what I remember, to die for, and it did not hurt that the waitress was hot.
Well,
and they had one of the few beers, like this. I'll always go back to my craft beer roots being in when I went to Italy and could taste a whole bunch of different beers. Because we like to go there too, because they had this beer called Super Tenants that was 9% alcohol.
Oh, wow.
I always valued the higher percentage alcohol beers in my life.
Well, especially when you were in college, because you didn't have necessarily money to buy a lot of beers. So you wanted the beers that you did buy to count, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess, Kevin, maybe the moral of the story is to try to find places that are a little bit less or more off the beaten path to travel to. Like, I feel like there's plenty of good places that you can go to that aren't, you know, these world-famous sites.
But I do think that they kind of mentioned that some of the smaller places, like, I'd be interested to see if, oh, good Lord. When we went to Pisa, which was just a short train ride from Florence... and I'm trying to think of, there's another city along the way that we stopped at, but it was just to see the design, because it was one of the few, cities that still had a full medieval fort around it.
Oh, okay.
Like it hadn't been destroyed by any wars or anything at any juncture.
That's crazy.
Just because it was like a super small city.
Yeah. Kind of maybe out of the
Lucca.
Way.
Is the name of the city.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I wonder if places like that, people are still, if people are interested in going to that. But I do feel like they kind of mentioned, like, I would think that Pisa would still be a destination, and Lucca's just kind of along the way. Like, but yeah, I guess it'd be interesting to see, like, there, because there are only so many places that you can go, like, and the article even touched on it, that there are a lot of places that get more visitors than some of these places, and people don't bitch about it. Like, literally, Las Vegas and Orlando are built for people to be coming in.
Right.
Like, that's why they exist now. Like, I mean, that's how pervasive it is in the culture, is that there are two full cities that are basically dedicated to it. But, you know, when you're talking about these old cities in Italy, like, I can imagine just, you know, in Las Vegas, you can build to what you want. Like, they're dealing with cities that have literally, you know, or in some cases, buildings that have been around since, like, the 1400s or the 1500s. Like, you can't change that. Like, Las Vegas can be built for, you know, a destination, but there's not a whole lot you can do without completely altering the structure. You know, I don't want them to do anything to Il Duomo in... the cathedral, well, the dome in Florence, you know, that would compromise it. I mean, Brunelleschi designed that in 1542 or something like that, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of going off my top of my head with that one, but it was a long ass time ago. Like, there's only so much room there, and I don't know if you were just looking at it, but I do remember them mentioning that San Marco Piazza in Venice. Again, like, it's only so big. Like, you're on a number of different islands when you're in Venice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the largest, and it's right on the coast of the Adriatic Sea, which is kind of in larger part of the Mediterranean Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there are only so many people that you can fit in there. Like, there's nothing you can do to try and accommodate for, you know, these hordes of people that are trying to get on Instagram and taking their pictures of the piazza. Like, and I mean, if I went there again, I'd want to go there. Like, it's just one of those things that A, you do, but B, you get to see, and kind of comparing it to Las Vegas, the Venetian is modeled after the Doge's Palace. Like, it's literally, they took the Doge's Palace, and it's 2/3 the size is what the Venetian is.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point, though. Could there be a way to make recreations of these places in order to kind of draw off people from actually going there and potentially damaging these sites? You know, like you said, these sites that maybe existed for 500 years, and can it support people without, you know, having, you know, taking damage in some way? But there's my thought went to the cave paintings at Lascaux, right? Like, those are too fragile to have really anyone visit. So they have a recreation there on basically on the site that people can go and visit to be able to see.
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to build these off site.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's always something that, you know, being in the architecture field, like, there's always something about being in the building that you can't compare it. And it would just be tough. Like, I mean, you'd have to find the land to recreate all these places too, which would be pretty tricky.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. Like, it would just be tough. Like, I mean, it is cool that, because, I mean, I did take a look around, and when I did go to Las Vegas recently, like, going to the Venetian, like, I'm like, we have to go there. Like, I remember being in the Doge's Palace. I walked around, you know, and it was pretty cool that they even had the Bridge of Sighs, which is something that maybe not a lot of people are familiar with, but the Doge's Palace was, the Doge's was the head of the Venetian government. So that was, because he was kind of like a king, essentially. But they had their courtroom there, too, in the Doge's Palace. And the last thing, if you got convicted, the last time you saw the outside was when you walked over the Bridge of Sighs. And there's just, like, one window or one opening in the bridge that you can look out into the Adriatic Sea there. And it's the last time you ever saw the outside, because they throw you down in jail and you were down, you know, under water, literally. Like in a building, but underwater.
Below sea level.
Yeah, below sea level.
Size Sighs, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, yeah.
not like Raphael in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Different type of size.
Well, you went really for a deep cut on that. I was I was thinking S-I-Z-E, but I guess there's a couple different ways to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's, I mean, but do you think you would be okay with having seen a recreation of the Doge versus seeing the actual thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was still like
the Doge's Palace.
Yeah, like what they, and I remember seeing a TV program on the building of the one in the Venetian in Las Vegas. And though obviously the inside is completely different than what is actually at the Doge's Palace, it's still pretty bonkers to go and see how well they recreated that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously they had to make, like I said, it's not really full size, but I mean, it's still pretty bonkers. Like, they could recreate stuff like that. Like, I do think that that's a real possibility. That recreating now, I don't know how many people would go to that instead of, you know, the original one.
Like, how much cheaper would it have to be, I guess, to get there? Like, if they pop right. one up, you know, down the road somewhere in town here.
Yeah, I don't know if it was pretty cool because, I mean, you can go on a gondola ride inside of the Venetian.
Ooh.
And I mean, it did look just like. Now, I didn't actually take one in Venice. I took one in Capri, like the Capri Sun okay. drinks. But that's Capri was an island for the emperors off the coast of Naples in Italy. If people are not not familiar. But to keep with the geography, but I was
familiar with the pants mainly.
Oh yeah, I believe that is where the pant name comes from.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like you could do like 3D scanning to like get a real faithful reproduction of a historic place, and I feel like that would be good enough for me. I mean, it goes back a little bit to our story about the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge. You know, you can recreate something. Obviously, you know, Star Wars doesn't exist in the first place, but
right.
You can create it to the point where it feels real. So why couldn't you do that with a actual place that exists? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting if that does happen to help alleviate the problem.
Yeah.
But Ken,
I think we solved it, Kevin.
Yeah. Well, I do believe that we talked about my love of craft beer coming from
your time in Italy. Yeah.
From my time in Italy. I did pull up. I have been drinking this beer since last Saturday. I drank it when I was watching some Absolute Intense Wrestling. I had some during Tuesday night's show, but I forgot to review it when I was on there. But there is, I'm not completely sure if it's... Well, I know it's Warped Wing out of Dayton because I dropped my wife off and filled up my nice fancy growler with Whiskey Rebellion 2018 Special Reserve, I believe, because, well, you know, if it's supposed to be 2018 and now it's mid-2019, I'm going to guess we're in Special Reserve territory here. And it's a Russian Imperial Stout, 11.2% ABV.
Oh, now I was going to say, this did taste a little bit higher on the alcohol level. But
yeah, I almost caused an out from the travel log earlier by bringing this up. But yeah, this one is pretty heavy duty, to say the least. It is certainly a beer I would have appreciated back in the day because I am feeling pretty okay after having a pint.
Mm-hmm.
I know that during when I was watching wrestling, I had more than a pint and I was 100% feeling good after that.
Yeah.
And it is quite tasty. Like that that part does not hurt at all.
Yeah. I mean, for having said that it tastes like there's alcohol in it. It's not harsh or anything at all. So.
No, there's definitely a little bit of, you get the whiskey edge mm-hmm. to it because it has been aged in whiskey barrels.
Okay.
There
I can't
is,
detect that now that you said it. Yeah.
There is that part where I keep on laughing because the wife pretty much only drinks Russian Imperial Stouts at this juncture, or Imperial Stouts. Like, she doesn't like regular stouts. Like, there isn't enough alcohol in them. And there is definitely, even though they both have the similar roasted maltiness to them, there is kind of a creaminess and a kind of a different smoothness to Imperials that make them a little distinct from their non-Imperial brothers. I will love Guinness until I go to the grave, so I will always love have a place in my heart for stouts. But the Russian Imperial is certainly made its way in there too. I love me some dark beers, and this is one that you know, especially this time of the year, not typically a dark beer
right.
time of the year. So it was kind of nice to get a nice dark beer at this time.
Well, we've had some rainy weather and some dark skies, so I guess it kind of makes sense to have some dark beer.
Yeah, and Warp Wing does happen to distribute quite a bit. So if you are in the OPA region, go ahead and check it out if you can get it in cans. If not, I would suggest their 10-ton regular stout is quite tasty. It's different, obviously, but still, I would advise having that one. And with that, Ken, you're at Gozer 33. I'm at Frango 11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.